Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So Michael Pollan has carved out a place for himself in the pantheon of the sustainable food movement gods. He's a UC Berkeley journalism professor these days and author of The Omnivore's Dilemma, which has just been repurposed for kids in a young reader's edition. There's also a PBS documentary airing next week, and we know you'll want to know about this. We have so many Michael Pollan fans among you, we know. And on Channel 13 next week, there will be an adaptation of his first book about food, The Botany of Desire. He joins me now in our studios to talk about what kids need to know about food, and we'll preview the PBS show a little bit too. Michael Pollan, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be here.
So why did you repurpose Omnivore's Dilemma for a young audience?
Well, a couple reasons, but the main one was, you know, I realized if we're going to change this food system, we've got to begin with kids when they're forming their tastes. You know, one in three American children eats at a fast food outlet every day, and that this is the target of the modern food industry. And I thought it would be very useful for them to know where their food comes from. Where do those chicken nuggets come from? Where does that Big Mac come from?
How do you make them care? Lots of kids eat junk food and unbalanced meals and don't have health problems or gain weight, maybe not until they reach their 30s. So how much does it really matter? How can you make it matter to a kid what they eat when they don't see the effects?
Well, they do see the effects, though. Type 2 diabetes is showing up. We had to change the name to type 2 diabetes from adult onset because right. So many kids were getting it. The number of children in this city on any given day that are having that appointment with the pediatrician, where the pediatrician is saying, look, to the parents, your kid has metabolic syndrome. He or she is on a path to type 2 diabetes. And here's what it means. It's going to take 7 years off your lifespan, 80% chance of heart disease, and here's how you can get off that path. Get soda out of the house or whatever it is. Get some exercise. These things are preventable. So I think it's actually very urgent to kids, especially poor kids, because that's where the problem is greatest. It's one in two black and Hispanic kids in this country are predicted by the CDC to get type 2 diabetes in their lifespan. So that's one way to get to them. And the other way is that they really care about the planet and they really care about animals.
Are you trying to produce little foodies or little vegetarians?
I'm not trying to produce either. I'm a meat eater. I'm not against eating meat. I think we eat altogether too much meat. I'm trying to produce a generation of conscious eaters who understand that what happens on their plate affects the world and themselves more than anything else they do. I just want them to understand the stakes. I'm not telling anybody what to eat. I'm just saying learn about where your food comes from and then make your choice.
And it's not just about individual choices. You're so good at putting this in both cultural and political context. Back in 2007, you wrote that the Farm Bill dictates what our kids eat for lunch at school and that it, quote, treats our children as a human disposal for all the unhealthful calories that the Farm Bill has encouraged American farmers to overproduce. Wow. So what's the connection?
Well, you know, our school nutrition program, which is coming up for reauthorization in the next few months, and I think it's going to be a really important political battle because I think Michelle Obama is joining that battle, which is a terrific thing. When we started this program, it was because the public health problem we had amongst our kids was simply not enough calories. They needed more calories. And that aligned very well with the goals of the food industry, which is to get rid of calories because of the overproduction of the food system. So we basically force this food, you know, this cheap beef and processed chicken down this process to our kids. But the needs of our kids have changed. Now they need better quality calories, not just calories. Now they need fresh fruits and vegetables, and we're still sending down the junk, and we're treating them as disposals. We had this crisis in the pork industry because with swine flu, people thought they could get it from pork. You can't, but people thought you could, so they stopped eating pork. The pork industry goes to the government and says, we need a bailout. They get hundreds of millions of dollars from the USDA to buy their pork, and what do they do with it? Give it to the school lunch program. So that's how we're using it. We need to, we're basically educating a new generation of fast food consumers in our schools, and we need to educate a very different kind of generation.
And the Institute of Medicine recently issued a report that outlines recommendations for improved standards for the school lunch program. which haven't been reviewed since 1995. So what should kids be eating for lunch? What would you put in the school lunch program?
Well, I think, first of all, it needs to be cooked in the schools. I mean, right now, you know, most schools have lost the ability to cook food. They microwave it. And as soon as you microwave food, you're going to be feeding processed food. And processed food invariably has high levels of salt, sugar, and fat. So I think it has got to be cooked food. It can be all different kinds of things. There's nothing wrong with giving them meat or even, you know, hamburgers and things like that. That's real food. But it just has to be really cooked, and obviously more fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, if we can give our schools another dollar per student per day, those schools could buy food from local farmers, give a tremendous boost to the local food economy and the rural economy, and help with the kids' health. We also have to give them a little more time to eat. I really agree with Alice Waters. We should be giving them credit for a good lunch, just the way we give you credit to play games and do physical education.
And more time to eat? Go into that a little more?
Yeah. Well, you know, look, if you're giving kids chicken nuggets, tater tots, and 10 minutes to eat it in, you are basically saying, here's how to be a fast food consumer. Kids need to sit down at a table with other kids, have a conversation, realize that food is about communion. It's not just about fueling up. And it's a really important life skill and daily ritual, and we're giving short shrift to it. I also think we need to do recess before lunch because it's very hard to get kids to sit down if they're going to, you know, if they're going to get out to the playground.
The quicker I can finish my lunch, the quicker I can get to the playground.
I can go play, yeah, yeah. So let them, you know, burn off that energy outside, then come in and sit down for a nice lunch.
Michael Pollan here talking about the repackaging of his book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. For kids, also a coming PBS documentary next week, a version of his first book about food, The Botany of Desire. And that'll air next Wednesday night, the 28th, 8 p.m. on PBS. And this is the book in which you tell the story of four crops: tulips, potatoes, apples, and marijuana. How are these stories adapted for TV? What are we going to see?
Well, you're going to see those four stories. Thank God. There was some effort to make me change marijuana into a legal crop like wine, grapes, or something like that. But we stuck to our guns.
Well, you're not saying, come on, kids, smoke pot, are you?
No, but the way this book looks at marijuana is a little different than the sanctioned way of thinking about marijuana, which is essentially, you know, as a moral issue and as a crime issue. And you know, my take on it was very different. I was just, you know, looking at this human desire to change consciousness, which appears to be universal, what is that about? And what has marijuana taught us about the human brain? So I kind of was bracketing the drug war conversation and wanted to have a real scientific and philosophical discussion of this amazing plant. And, you know, what are the odds that a plant would evolve a molecule that could change the content of human brains? And why is it doing that? And those are the questions that engaged me. But it was very hard to talk that way. And I knew when we got funding for this film that the drug war was on its last legs.
Huh. Well, even President Obama would disagree with that statement, I'm sure. But what does it have to do with tulips and potatoes and apples to get back to the botany of desire? What's the unifying idea?
This was the book where I really – this is the kernel of a lot of the subsequent food work. But it's where I came to understand that domestication is a two-way street, that, you know, we didn't just tell the apple what to do to be big and red and sweet. We were being manipulated by the apple also to attract its attention, get us to spread its genes, and that we humans are a lot like bees. We get duped by flowers, by fruits, into doing work for them. And that once you start to look at nature this way, from the plant's eye view, everything looks very different. And you realize as humans that we are really woven right into the fabric of nature, which most of us, I mean, we know intellectually, but we don't feel it. We still think we're different. We have a relationship to nature. What other creature has a relationship to nature? We are in nature. And once you explore these relations, we've had these really amazing histories with the tulip and the potato and marijuana and the apple. You realize that, you know, we're right in there with all the other creatures making these evolutionary votes, you know, being selected. You know, we've changed in these relationships too. We can digest things we couldn't digest before. We evolved to be able to digest milk and grain. And that's, you know, that was to serve the plants.
Tulips, apples, marijuana, potatoes. The book was originally published in 2002, and one of my producers was wondering, if you were going to pick another crop to track the history of now, what would it be?
Well, I did it in Omnivore's Dilemma, and that was corn. I realized that corn was the great winner in the dance of domestication. And I didn't deal with it in that book for a lot of reasons, but I started to realize then. I mean, the last section of Botany of Desire has got the kernel, no pun intended, of all the food work, where I learned about monoculture, where I learned about the industrialization of our food system, and the importance of biodiversity as opposed to monoculture. But corn is right up there. And the orchid, too. I'm pretty interested in orchids, too. They're very deceptive plants. Basically, you know, a big part of my project is to encourage us to give a little more credit to plants. You know, they just sit there. They don't move around. They don't think, as far as we know. They don't have consciousness. They don't have language. But in fact, they are as sophisticated as we are. They just have a different set of tools for getting along in life. And their great tool is organic chemistry. They're better at that than we are. I mean, we couldn't come up with THC.
But there was a story earlier this year, a problem earlier this year. The tomato crop suffered from
late blight.
Yeah, and early onset late blight in our region, which killed a lot of tomato plants. Small organic farmers really got hit hard. Are we going to start seeing more of this with certain crops?
Well, you know, that's a classic case of the dangers of monoculture. As I understand it, so many seedlings were being sold in the Northeast that were coming from one grower in Georgia, who and Walmart and Home Depot were buying from this guy and selling all over the Northeast. And this is, you know, a powerful argument for diversification, for not relying on one species, one grower. And, you know, because whenever you put all your eggs in one basket, you're vulnerable to diseases. That is the same blight, you know, that killed a million Irish in 1845, 1846. The late blight, because they were only growing one kind of potato, the lumper. And I tell this story in Botany of Desire. When a disease came along, and sooner or later a disease will come along, it just wiped out the crop. It turned to black mush virtually overnight. So we have to realize that planting, you know, too much of the same kind of tomato, too much of the same kind of corn, eating too much, you know, we eat too many russet Burbank potatoes because that's the only kind McDonald's will use. Well, that is a vulnerability. That makes for a very brittle food system.
Michael Pollan, his 2002 book, The Botany of Desire, will be on television as a PBS documentary next Wednesday night. His book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, has just been repurposed and repackaged in a kid's version. So one last thought, because yesterday on the White House lawn, First Lady Michelle Obama hosted a bunch of school kids with the Agriculture Secretary, Tom Vilsack, and you will remember fondly the Brian Lehrer Show listeners' movement to get you nominated Agriculture Secretary, but they had Healthy Kids Day at the White House, and they talked about the Ag Department's Healthier U.S. School Challenge. So do you think, can this change something?
Yeah, I think it can. I think what Michelle Obama is doing is very important. And the way we change this food system is work on the kids and work on the parents and redefine what it means to be a good parent around food. You know, a lot of parents, especially poor parents, think that they're doing their kids a favor when they take them to McDonald's, that this is a treat. And it is a treat. And it's a cheap luxury that a lot of people can afford. Michelle Obama is trying to send a different message, that being a good parent is about cooking for your kids, about giving them real food. And in the same way I think that Laura Bush helped redefine parenting to include something like reading to your kids, that's part of our definition of a good parent, Michelle Obama is trying to do something very similar around food. And I think she's got exactly the right idea.
Michael Pollan, Botany of Desire, on television next week. Omnivore's Dilemma, now for kids. Always great to see you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Nina Totenberg and David Byrne up next. Stay tuned.